Welcome, welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your hosts, Matty Wood, Matthew Davis, and the Roto-Gut, Vlad Settler.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. This episode is the last one in the month of February. In March, it's showtime. It is all of our drafts, draft season in full effect. And baseball is basically coming at the end of the month. So we are here on February the 28th. And so you'll be listening to this in early part of March. And I am joined, as always, by my colleague, my partner in crime in many ways, though he has left me for greener pastures in Chicago or the suburbs around there. It's Matty Wood, Matthew Davis.
Hello. And what was that? Good afternoon. It was a bright and sunny day here in the North Shore of Chicagoland, actually. I had my shorts on for a few hours, so that was quite lovely. And as you mentioned, draft season certainly is ramping up. We are now only 3 weeks away from heading to Las Vegas for the NFBC. And then the week prior to that, they're going to be having some drafts out in New York. It's the best time of season right now for us right now. So we're ramping up and I'm really excited to talk about starting pitchers. It's a lot to digest, but personally, I think it is the most important part that you need to get correct in your drafts to succeed. So hopefully we don't piss too many people off and we can provide some good information along the way, but I'm excited to get into it, but it is a lot. It's a lot to tackle.
It is. And that's why today we'll try to get through as much as we can. There are obviously a lot of pitchers, over 100 that would be drafted, starting pitchers that would be drafted through 30 rounds of a 15 teamer, 450 overall. We'll probably get through the first few tiers, maybe up until 10 rounds or so, or at least we'll do our best. But just to remind you, in case you haven't, make sure you join us, ftnfantasy.com/MLB. Everything you could possibly want as far as fantasy baseball content is there. You can use the promo code FTNPOD. And by the way, I'm doing a Beat Vlad Settler RotoWire Online Championship. It's an NFBC draft. It's a 350 entry. We are live streaming it Friday night at 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 Eastern for the late night owls on the East Coast. So there are six spots left in that draft. Maybe none by the time you hear this, but if you do want to get into that, please do. It'll be YouTubed with Tom and Derek of NFBC. And then the following Thursday is going to be a Beat Michael Govier online nice. Championship. So that'll be pretty fun as well. So ftnfantasy.com and FTNPOD promo code gets you 20% off. Starting pitchers, let's do it, man. Let's just get right into it. I think it goes without saying, at least in the NFBC, it's really, starting pitchers are really the lifeblood of our rosters. It's something that people have tried many different things with, right? Like if you're in a points league head to head in your Yahoo, CBS leagues or whatnot, there are different ways, in the past, like 10 years ago, you could wait several rounds to grab a pitcher. There's no overall component. It's a closed league, a satellite league of 12 or 15 teams. You can always sort of make do. You can win a league without really prioritizing pitching. In NFBC, that's very hard to do, especially when you start moving up in the higher stakes. I know you and I have been playing a lot of the draft champions, the 50 rounders, and pitching has been reasonable. I mean, we haven't seen it really in many years where there are basically only two or three starting pitchers in the first round. And there's kind of a big drop off to the second tier, but things that are changing, like for those that are interested, the higher value, higher dollar draft champions, the 400s, the 1000s, there's even a 2500 and a 5000. Pitching's going crazy. Like we've seen guys like Strider, Rodon, these guys are going like at the end of the first round, right? I mean, that's kind of the extreme of it. But basically, the most important thing is that you have a plan of attack for the position. Wherever your tiers are, your tier drop-offs, once you have your KDS spot, you kind of know how you want to attack it, where you want to get your first couple starting pitchers, who your middle guys are, so on and so forth. So it's very important. So, that's kind of how to start it off, starting pitchers.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously, without saying it too many times, beating the dead horse, starting pitchers will rise. Like you mentioned, in these higher stakes drafts that we are seeing, when it gets to the main events, you're certainly going to be seeing the pitchers that were going at the beginning of round two. So Cole and Burns, they're for sure going to be going in round one. You'll likely see Strider get bumped up into round one. And so it's going to be a domino effect, and it's kind of just push everybody up just a little bit for the most part in these early rounds. But that's most commonly known for the NFBC. In your Yahoo leagues and stuff like that, though, I think that you might be willing to be able to take a little bit more risk with there being IL spots, and you can take more shots on some upside with a little bit more risk involved. But the thing that I think is relevant right now when you're starting to digest your research with spring training is not most of the stuff we're seeing is very positive, right? Where we are going to be getting a lot of positive reports out of camp, and hopefully you should be getting positive reports, because we just had these professional athletes have a winter off to prepare and train to get ready for the next season. But there are some things that you kind of want to pay attention to if you are looking through Twitter or watching, you know, videos or reading news and reports from beat reporters. Are pitchers, what are they doing differently if they were not successful last year? So some of these pitchers that are coming into this season, is there an opportunity to buy a dip? I think that that's one of the bigger ways that we can find ourselves finding profit when it comes to pitching. So what are they doing, and is it relevant? Are they adding another pitch to their pitch mix? Are they trying to increase a pitch to their pitch mix that potentially could provide more swing and misses, upping the increase in strikeout rates, et cetera? Also, some of these pitchers coming in healthy and having an increase in velocity early on. So I think that those are some of the things that we could look at and say, okay, maybe these are some viable points of news that we should bake in, but sometimes it can still bite us in the ass, right? There's reports sometimes we see like this guy's throwing 100 early, and you know, it doesn't always work out. So you kind of got to take some of it with a grain of salt, but I think it is really important to continue monitoring how these guys are feeling and what they're doing, and what are they trying to do in spring training to improve upon their previous season. It's a lot to keep up with. You and I are both fathers, and you just got to try your best. Twitter is obviously the best resource I would recommend to do that. Follow all the beat reporters for each team, and then use your own judgment along the way.
Yeah. And also I think one of the things that I've really noticed, and I've been writing about basically since our draft guide came out in December, is how it was really a perfect storm with the late round pitchers, with all the humidors in effect, and just the fact that if you look at 80th percentile categories, whether it's the 12 team OC or the main event, there's a huge differential between those targets in 2021 and 2022. So when I'm setting my 80th percentile targets as I'm drafting, I'm probably looking for a number somewhere in the middle, and that's just based on assumptions that may or may not come to fruition. But alone, like in the main event, for example, a huge difference between an 80th percentile ERA on a main event 15 teamer last season was like an ERA of like 3.3, whereas 3.38, whereas the previous season it was 3.6 or 3.55, whatever. Same thing with strikeouts, big differential there. Just everywhere you look. So for me, when I'm setting category targets, I'm kind of balancing it out between the last 2 years, maybe weighted a little bit more on last year, but I do expect the balls to be a little bit different. And then the other thing is, I never recommend extreme strategies. At least that's what has worked for me. I've seen Dalton Del Don from Yahoo, a veteran, great player. Been doing this for so many years, and he's a really good NFBC player. He pulled it off a couple years ago. He went really heavy early starting pitching and closers, and he just nailed it with the hitters. But it's so difficult to do. It's so unique. And I don't think you're going to have all these gifts like we had last season, where if you look at the top 30 starting pitchers from last year, so many of them came from the later rounds or from FAB. So everybody from Kyle Wright, Gonsolin, Christian Javier, Nestor Cortez, Nicolas, the list goes on and on. It was really a blessed year for starting pitching. That was sort of the perfect storm. So for me, I'm all about balanced drafting. I'm never in a position where I want to ever go you know, three starting pitchers off the top, like, you know, super pocket triple aces, whatever you call them, or go all hitting and then wait for like Tristan McKenzie as my SP1. That's just not how I build. It might work for people, but I typically don't recommend it, because as the draft goes, you can get caught in quite the pickle.
Yeah, if you think that you're going to be able to outsmart your entire league in finding the next Tyler Anderson and Tony Gonsolin, Kyle Wright, Spencer Strider, Nestor Cortez, it's bad news for you. It's probably not going to end well. I've tried this strategy. I've done main events where I haven't I've started a draft without selecting a starting pitcher in the first four or five rounds. And it's never, ever, ever ended well. And anytime I've gone into a draft and I've told myself I'm going to pony up, more times than not, I think I've had a little bit more success in that regard. And I think the other thing I've gotten a little bit more comfortable with is, yeah, if all these guys are rising and you're having to pony up for it and pay this, what you think is an overpay, other pieces have to fall. So players that you do like in other areas that are big targets for you, you might be now getting at a discount. So look at some of these discounts that you're potentially getting along the way, kind of making up for the overpay. If you are playing in the NFBC, especially in the main event, if this is your first year, second year, and you're looking at some of the ADP data right now, and you're thinking, man, I really like Kevin Gausman and let's say Carlos Rodon. I can get them in rounds 3 and 4. I don't know if that's necessarily going to be true in the main event. So you could get shell-shocked a little bit when you see some of these guys go and Max Scherzer goes in rounds 2 or 3. Don't scramble away. Don't shy away. Just kind of go with the flow and stick with it. And then hopefully you get those discounts in other positions elsewhere.
And the one thing I always remind myself when I go into a draft, and of course you love to get the big hitters early. Obviously there are drop-offs. There are those middle rounds where you're like, kind of don't love these hitters, but I need to fill positions. The thing is, if you do not have strong starting pitching, you will find yourself chasing bad starting pitchers all season, like absolutely gross two-star pitchers that everyone else is fighting for. And because they have two starts, you will somehow subconsciously convince yourself that, oh, this might, you know, this is good, or yeah, I'm getting some strikeouts here. And all of a sudden, you know, it's Cole Irvin faces his old team, the A's, and gets blasted for 8 earned runs. And then, you know, if you have solid guys in your rotation, especially, you know, I'm talking specifically like main event, then you have to worry about that less. You're not trying to stream, you know, like two of your final two roster spots there on your pitching side. And you really put yourself in a better position to sort of not wreck your ratios. And it's really easy to do. And that's why I'm even an advocate of this season. Honestly, like I will take my 10th pitcher in a 30 rounder before I've even filled in my offense. Like I have no problem with that this year, because I'd rather have sort of aces, pseudo aces in the hole and solid arms there, as opposed to some of these, you know, late round hitters. There's a bunch of them guys, all these, you know, McCutcheons, Oliverises, whoever it may be, guys that I can fill in, guys we can stream, we can make it work. I know it might seem like it might be difficult because of last season. If you remember, a lot of us were chasing power and it was really kind of hard to find the right bats to fit in our lineup. We were sort of chasing with fab all year, but it's always more difficult with pitching. Occasionally we land on the gems, like, you know, folks did a couple Aprils ago, three Aprils ago with Lucas Giolito. So it happens, but it's really rare. And so that's why I really like to prioritize starting pitching.
Also, in regards to streaming, hitters are much easier to stream. And then the turnover rate, you mentioned all these guys that you're going to end up, drafting hitters like the McCutcheons and the cheaper later on in the drafts, because you're pounding pitching earlier. You add these guys, you cut these guys if they don't work out, and then you can find a guy for a dollar that week that works, and he ends up popping for you. And if he doesn't, it doesn't necessarily hurt you as much as you overspending for a two-step that does damage to your ratios. You even spend even more in regards to looking for pitchers with better matchups and stuff like that, and you think that the market's in on that guy, so then you're kind of, you know, spending an extra dollar or two more. I think it's just the time and resources is just too much, and it's a headache. I noticed with the main event team that I did last year, and it had Tyler Anderson, Kyle Wright, and Tony Gonsolin. It had all three of those guys. And each week when I went to Fab to look at who I was cutting and who I was adding, it was really just maybe a dart throw for a second or third closer. And then it was all about, just streaming in a little bit of hitting pieces, you know, the turnover rate, trimming the fat at the bottom. And it makes things much, much more easy in the long run. It just simplifies all of it.
And so kicking things off, I mean, everyone's aware of the first round options. They're basically, you have three guys. One of them is a hybrid in Shohei Ohtani. He's like a, it's a luxury that not everyone wants to take on, because most are using him as a hitter, or they're drafting him as such, and to stick him in your utility spot, you might almost feel like you're sort of chasing, filling the rest of your hitter position slots, kind of like the whole draft. But obviously there'll come a time, you know, there'll be a time when he has a two step and, you know, you can pop him in there. Or on a half week, like maybe after the All-Star break, and, you know, obviously you would play him there, and he's an elite pitcher, right? As a pitcher, probably would be a second rounder. As a hitter, he's a second rounder, pretty much, maybe even borderline first. So there's something really good. If you know you're going to, I mean, nobody knows anything, but if you get a full season again from Ohtani, you know, it's going to be pretty good, and it's going to be beneficial for your fantasy team. So we won't get too much into the stats, but, you know, it's Ohtani, it's Corbin Burns, and it's Gerrit Cole. And Burns and Cole have been top two guys in strikeout rate, both over 32% over the last couple seasons. Cole got hurt a little bit on the ratios, kind of unexpected. You really don't expect to see a 3.5. He was just giving up more home runs than usual. In fact, since over the last two seasons, he's given up almost double the homers Corbin Burns has. Of course, Corbin Burns doesn't put in as many innings. I don't think maybe Milwaukee isn't as good of a team for run support. But obviously, both aces. And as we've seen, these are guys they'll be all over the place, right? In a certain draft, they'll be both gone by pick eight. And then in another one, they'll be around at the end of the, the first round turn. And then so much of it will have to do with what happens with some of these hitters, right? Like if say, for example, Jordan Alvarez's hand is kind of an issue, Mookie Betts, hurts his hamstring in spring or something else. Like those guys start kind of falling off, those hitters, Burns and Cole are going to be even more valuable. You might even see them going in the top five at some point. Really just depends on the draft.
Yeah, the one thing I do question is Burns is kind of the consensus 1-1 when we look at the ADP data over at the NFBC. And there are a couple question marks that I do have. So his K minus walk rate, so strikeouts minus walk percentage, it dipped 6% when we saw from 2021 to 2022. So last season, still elite. Everything's still here elite. Not trying to knock him, but just I think it's important when we're choosing who's the 1-1, like we might need to just see if there's something a little bit to question. So we have a 6% dip in the K minus walk rate. The home run per nine spiked up from 0.38 to 1.02. And then on top of this, with the new scheduling, he's not going to see the Pirates and the Reds as much, so he's going to get a little more AL East, NL West, et cetera. So NL East as well. So I think there's a couple of things to question there in comparison to Cole. I actually do like Cole a little bit more than Corbin Burns. If it was my preference, and I've had to make that selection in a recent draft in a 400, and I went with Cole over Burns. And I think that the biggest knock on Cole, obviously, is the home run. So the 1.48 home run per nine last season for Gerrit Cole, and then in 1.19 in 2021. Third highest home run per nine rate last year at 16.8%, only behind Josiah Gray and Herman Marquez. And the first thing we look at when we talk about Josiah Gray is like, wow, look how terrible he is at giving up the deep ball. So that's definitely been a downside for Cole, but he's your best bet to give you 200 plus innings pitched and a 25 plus percent K minus walk rate, which isn't what Burns gave you last season. So if I was trying to just, a little bit here and there, I think I would still go with the older dude in Gerrit Cole over Corbin Burns. But I mean, I'm not going to knock anybody for one or the other. I think if you've drafted one of them in your first round, you've made an awesome pick.
Yeah. And last season, I mean, Corbin Burns, I mean, I think Baseball HQ has nice values. Razzball as well, but I'm just looking at the Razzball player rater. Corbin Burns was the SP10 last year. Garrett Cole was the SP12. And obviously there were, you know, big strikeout guys and Burns amazing ratios and everything. But there were, you know, there were 9-10 guys that performed better than them, right? I mean, Urias, who doesn't strike out, and Manoa, but neither of those guys are massive strikeout guys. They're both around a K an inning. They both produced higher roto value 5x5 last season. Sure. Verlander, obviously the 1-1 and Alcantara the 2. But they didn't hurt you, right? It wasn't a mistake drafting them where you did last year because they were still helpful. But then last season, you added in some of the Wrights and Gonsolins later on down the line. Then you had a really good season with pitching. I mean, last season for me, pitching was not an issue. On my teams that did not have Aaron Judge, I was struggling to find power and to get hitting all season. But nailing a lot of these pitchers really wasn't an issue. So it will not hurt you, but you have to think, I really think it comes down to roster construction and mapping it out. If you do have the 9th pick, you're going into a draft with the 9th pick and you think you have a 65% chance of getting one of those two guys falling to you. Maybe it's even higher than that. Depends on the draft. Then you have to really figure out what you want to do in the 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, and so on beforehand. Like at least have a plan or, you know, map out with your targets. And then compare that to a plan if you were to take the best hitter on the board. Like what pitchers are then better available? The more prepped you are, the more you sort of plan that out, then it makes more sense to you, right? Because you can map them out in all different directions. You'd be like, you know what? It doesn't make sense for me to grab Burns or Cole here because I have, say, Strider or Alcantara not that far below them, but I can get the bigger, better hitter that where there's a big drop off in the 2nd round with the hitter there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Sometimes, though, you get yourself into a trap there when you go, well, I can wait just a little bit because this guy's kind of similar. And then all of a sudden, the yellow brick road has been painted and you're like, he's kind of stuck with your hands in your back pocket and now you're reaching for somebody, you know, that you don't like, or you're being forced into something you don't want to do. So I think just ponying up early in the NFBC, not in your home leagues. I think if you know your home leagues and how those things go, get your guys when you're used to custom getting them. But you know, as we go on though, I think that there's some guys like you just mentioned. How easy it sounds like, well, if you don't get Burns and Cole, then you can just get Strider or Alcantara. And it's, I'm not necessarily sure all these guys are so sweet that we're going to be talking about, especially even this early. So, let's move on. Do you want to get into Spencer Strider or Sandy Alcantara next?
Well, I was going to say that, for those that, I mean, I think most people know, but the Yellow Brick Road refers to the draft board that's painted in NFBC.
Yes, sorry.
If you look at that draft board, the yellow are all the pitchers. So, those are the
one other thing. We should have called Dalton Del Don the Wizard of Oz when he had his successful season after drafting so many pitchers early in the draft like that.
Yeah, absolutely. The Wiz. So tier two, this is the much more interesting one because there's so many ways that people rank this tier. And we'll just kind of throw out the names and attack them little by little. But obviously, there's Spencer Strider and Carlos Rodon, two guys that I feel are getting massive helium lately. And as I mentioned, we've seen these guys go in the early 2nd round. We might see them go there if they're healthy and look good through the spring. We'll see them there in the main events and later in other drafts. On the flip side, you got Jacob DeGrom, who is kind of going the other way, right? People are very tentative, very hesitant to invest in him, and it makes a lot of sense. And then the rest of the guys are nice and solid, I would say, for the most part, but they're not exactly massive helium guys. You got Woodruff and Nola, your perennial 3rd-round guys, 2nd-round guys. Alcantara now in the mix off of that amazing season last year. You got the two old veterans on the Mets, Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander. And then you got last year's AL Cy Young guy until he got hurt and Verlander took over. That's Shane McClanahan. And then Dylan Cease as well. I don't have him in this tier. Technically, I'm just a step below, but he technically is drafted in this tier. So we're talking about pitchers between like 20 to 45 overall. And then if you really want to go, I should throw in this name because I have seen him getting drafted here and I've seen the helium. It's Christian Javier. He is now basically starting to go in this tier. So tack it however you want.
Oh, man. You know what? Let's start with Brandon Woodruff. Let's get into Woody because, Vlad, you know, I've loved Brandon Woodruff quite a bit over the last few years. But I've seen quite a bit, you know, from group chats and just Twitter and now that we have TGFBI, actually, I'm not playing in it this year, but seeing some tweets and threads of player picks. And anytime I see Brandon Woodruff, it's just kind of two thumbs up and there is no snake in his boots. So it's all systems go. But, people, what they're buying is career high swinging strike rate of 14.1% for Brandon Woodruff. The fastball velocity is always consistently at 96. He has now four straight seasons of a strikeout minus walk rate of 22.9% or higher. So all things are looking really good when you look at that from the Brandon Woodruff standpoint. But we do have some time missed now on his ledger, three seasons here. I'm going to be dating back just a little bit. So bear with me. So we've had the hamstring issue in 2017, the oblique issue in 2019, the ankle issue in 2022. And then during the time missed with the ankle injury, he was diagnosed with Raynaud's syndrome. And if you're not familiar with that, it causes numbness to your fingers, and that's due to limited blood flow. Fortunately for him, when he returned, he was absolutely lights out and he was a beast. He was on my main event team, the Vegas team that also had the Gonsolin, you know, Anderson, Kyle Wright team pitching staff. But he was phenomenal. And so we kind of forget, right? We forget, well, he's had some time missed and he had no feeling in his fingers. He's a starting pitcher. I kind of want my starting pitcher to have feeling in his fingers. That kind of is a little bit bothersome for me, right? Because when we look at starting pitchers, we do need to say that they all do have injury risk, but then there's sort of a threshold of, or not a threshold, I should say it kind of an increase marker that goes up per pitcher. And I don't think that Woody's is necessarily all the way, you know, down low, where some of us might think it is. And then when you look at like kind of his workload over the previous two seasons, he's averaged 166.1 innings pitched, and he's never thrown over 180 innings or more. I know that he threw like 179, and I'm only including regular season. So he did do that with the added postseason, but he's never done that in regular season. And then his fly ball rate's now jumping a little bit. So it jumped to 43% last year. So there are things, right? I'm kind of highlighting him because when we look at these early pitchers, we just tap them and go, oh yeah, safe pick, good stuff. Like, yeah. And I loved it's past tense kind of Brandon Woodruff. I guess I'm saying I'm out on him, because of those things that I issued, or just listed and mentioned. And, for me, when I do find kind of just little ticky tack shit along the way, it kind of adds up for me this early draft capital, when you can compare him to other guys that are going to still be available. And for me, it's got me out on him.
Yeah. And I think the good debate always is it's like, you're either a Nola guy or you're a Woodruff guy, right? There's like those two camps.
Love this Nola.
they're right there in the mix, close to one another. And, man, it's tough. Nola has those, you just never know where the ratios are going to be. Mm-hmm. They've just been, you know, he had that bad luck season in 2021 where he basically had an ERA over 4.5 and all the indicators were basically a whole run less. So he really had, you know, bad strand rate, got BABIP to up a lot, but the strikeouts have always been there. He's, you know, incredibly consistent in that department, like over 29% over the last few seasons, always getting you like 220 plus strikeouts, and he's healthy. He's always healthy. So, and in three of the last four full seasons, or excluding 2020, he's pitched over 200 innings. So in that regard, there is a little bit more safety there, I guess, than Brandon Woodruff. Woodruff is just more trustworthy with his home park, with the ratios when he does pitch, at least he is for me. So alone on his Sierra and Sierra, I kind of am using a little bit more, especially more than XFIP, just based on some work that was done. Alex Fast of Pitcher List did a fantastic article for us, as did Alex Blickle of FTN, just kind of just showing Sierra as a little bit more of a consistent indicator, or just, you know, less noisy than the other ones. And it makes sense for that. But either way, Woodruff, fifth lowest since the beginning of the 2020 season, a 3.21 Sierra, sixth lowest ERA at 2.8, pretty impressive. And the third highest strikeout rate over that span, basically the last two and a half seasons, 30%. So, you know, you mentioned all the injuries he's dealt with. That's the one concern. If you're projecting the two, it's very easy to project Nola for over 200 and Woodruff for under that, of course.
It's sad for me to say that I'm going to be kind of smudging off my Sharpie of Matty Wood underneath Woody's cleat this season. But you do provide some good points. And if he does stay healthy and maybe we do see an uptick in volume, oh, he's proven me well wrong. So I'm not here to knock, you know, the pick or the player, because I do like him. But I think that it's important as a practice to try and find some warts, right? I mean, if these guys are going this early, I think that we need to try and at least try and find something that's wrong with these guys. And each season there are going to be pitchers that go in round two, round three, round four that don't pan out. And maybe it's due to, you know, some analysis or just people just missing some of these tiny, tiny little warts. So, I kind of wanted to use him as an early, you know, example of that.
Yeah. And I didn't want to skip over the two guys that a lot of people are very interested in. Obviously that's Spencer Strider and Carlos Rodon. But Rodon, he's just got that feel of, I don't know if I've heard, I'm trying to listen to as many other podcasts as I can. There are a lot of great podcasts out there. I think we're going to have the Battle of the Pod soon, which is great. It's a fantastic industry. I love to support everybody as much as I can. Anytime I'm walking the dog, I'm listening to a podcast. But has anyone said that Carlos Rodon could easily beat out his own teammate, Gerrit Cole, and actually be the SP1? Like, if he's healthy, why couldn't he?
Are you mocking me? Because I said that as a guest on a podcast recently.
Oh, no, I'm not. I swear to God. So I guess you're part of it. No, I wouldn't do that to you.
Joe Orko had me on talking. Maybe it was that podcast or not. It was somewhere recently.
Probably some high level trolling. I'm not capable of that.
Yeah, Rodon. I was like, what is he doing right now? He's kind of jabbing me.
No.
So to sum it up, I think I said at the end of it, you know, kind of putting a hot take on Rodon is if you know, the longevity of the season, and if healthy at the end of it, I would not be surprised if the back of the baseball card looked better in comparison with Carlos Rodon to teammate Gerrit Cole, and if he was the game one starter in playoff games. So but why, right? We got to kind of get into, like, how is this guy so good? Second highest strikeout rate amongst starting pitchers with a minimum of 130 innings pitched. So Rodon had a 33.4% strikeout rate. That was tied. He tied Cole, his teammate now, for the fourth highest strikeout minus walk rate at 26.1%. It's just truly phenomenal. And then the home runs, man, he's just not giving them up. He's got the fourth lowest home run to fly ball rate at 6.5%. And Carlos Rodon was also top 10 in a home run per nine at 0.61. If you're concerned about the park factor, Yankee Stadium, the short porch, lefties don't touch them. I believe last year, don't want to be lazy about it. So his home run to fly ball rate against lefties last season was 0.52, and the K minus walk rate was 27%. So even if you're able to, they're having a hard time even making contact against them. Left-handed hitters are. So I'm not necessarily concerned that he's going to regress or have some big impact in regards to going from San Francisco and Oracle Park to Yankee Stadium. I don't think that we need to really be concerned about that. The health is the biggest concern that people are going to be having when it comes to Carlos Rodon. So he's battled shoulder issues throughout his entire career. But the last time that he was on the IL for anything that was shoulder related was in 2021, and Carlos Rodon missed 19 days for that, which in all honesty, it's really not too shabby, right? Because we've seen it's full seasons missed for shoulder injuries, which Rodon kind of missed all, what was it, 2020 and 2019, I believe, were pretty much missed because of shoulder issues. So then he comes back, gets the a little bit of a tweak in the adjustments with his windup. So the mechanics and balance get more stabilized, and then we see the uptick in the fastball velocity. So now he's sitting at 95.5 on average over the last two seasons. And then the most interesting point that I kind of makes me comfortable in drafting him, because like we mentioned earlier, starting pitchers have this injury risk. And while each one has a marker that continues to go up, yes, his is, it's got some color to it and it is up and it is increased. But over the last two seasons, he has averaged 155.1 innings pitched. And it's pretty interesting because there are pitchers that we kind of deem as workhorses, or, you know, we think that they're just going out there every fifth day and we don't bat an eye. But Max Scherzer was only at 162.2 over that time. Zach Gallen was at 152, albeit we know that he's not considered to be that workhorse. But Shane Bieber, he was at 148. So he's averaged seven less innings pitched per season over the last 2 years. And then Lance Lynn, who we deem a big workhorse and bulldog, he was at 139. So Rodon hasn't necessarily been somebody who's killed you in volume as a starting pitcher. And if he's not killing you in volume as a starting pitcher and you're continuing to get his stats and metrics, you're going to the moon.
Yes. Yes.
And plus and wins.
Plus. Oh wins. Yeah. He'll get some, he'll get some of those too. I have a just a random comparison. I did bring it up in my NFBC positional tiers article, but it's wild to me when you consider that Spencer Strider and Sandy Alcantara essentially have the same ADP. So if you just go to a basic NFBC draft, I mean, yeah, for the most part, crazy. Strider is going higher. He's got more upside. I understand. Alcantara, man, I mean, his ratios were elite. Every week you knew just how dependable he was. But think about it. These guys going near the same ADP had nearly 100 difference in innings. Spencer yeah. Strider, some of them were relief innings in the early part of the season. He pitched 97 less innings. Fewer, and had only five less strikeouts, 202 to 207. That blows my mind.
I have that same stat here, brother. Like our research.
And so what is it about?
What does that tell you?
I mean, it blows the mind, first of all, but what well, I think there are two kinds of drafters, because there's something when you played fantasy for a really long time, you play fantasy baseball for a long time. Sometimes things are maybe sometimes too good to be true, or maybe they just end up being. Maybe Strider is just the next big thing. Like, what really sets him back, right? He's not going to all of a sudden suck and have a 4 ERA. Like, he is an elite arm. Is it injury? Can't really predict that. You can't really, you know, draft based on that. But yeah, they're two kinds of drafters, right? Or sometimes the best ones are the ones that balance the two, but it's the risk and the safety drafters. And I understand why somebody would want to take what you would expect is the consistency of Alcantara week to week. But man, I mean, Spencer Strider is a much better chance, I think, is being not only SB1, but just blowing the field away.
Parents, if you're in the car driving with your children, put it on mute for a second, please. If you're deciding to draft a starting pitcher between Sandy Alcantara and Spencer Strider, if you like using condoms, then I guess Sandy Alcantara is your guy. But other than that, and you want to have some fun or explore, it's definitely Spencer Strider. So I think the people that are not drafting Spencer Strider and are choosing Sandy Alcantara minus the condom, they're concerned because he had a slight oblique injury that caused him to miss some time in mid-September, and we've only seen 132 innings pitched from him. So the question is how many he goes? And how many he goes, what are you getting at those rates? And you mentioned at the 132 what he produced, which was damn near close to Alcantara. So if you're skeptical on the innings pitch, I kind of want to use Corbin Burns as an example, because that's kind of the elite level, or that is the elite level that we're seeing at Spencer Strider, where he had the highest K-minus walk rate for any pitcher with 130 or more innings pitch. Strider did with 29.7%. The highest swinging strike rate among starting pitchers in that same threshold, tied with Kevin Gausman and Shane McClanahan. He has a mustache. His average fastball velocity was 98 miles per hour. And he was already hitting that in spring this year. So you're already seeing this healthy young ox come in, and he's pumping the velocity early on. Okay, back to this, the innings pitch question mark real quick in Corbin Burns before I handed it back off to you. So Corbin Burns pitched 49 innings in 2019. He pitched 59.2 innings in 2020, regular season. Then in 2020, the huge, massive breakout season, he threw 167. So we saw a spike of over 100 innings pitched, right? Nobody else in the world can do that. And I've seen on Twitter a quote from somebody inside the Braves organization. It was a pitching coach or somebody on the pitching staff that was already saying, like, and please don't come at me saying that I'm saying that he can do this, but I swear to you, I saw somewhere and I'll have to find it. And if I do, I will quote tweet it, that why couldn't he tap 180 innings this year? Like, it wasn't even, the guy wasn't even batting an eye. You get 100. What if you get 150 even? Let's say they yank him and want to manage him down the stretch at a 150 in this era.
Yeah, I mean, the pretty close to the new DeGrom.
And what if you get 180?
DeGrom.
Yeah, so for me, when I'm looking at that, because look, yes, Alcantara broke the game last year with 220-plus innings pitched. He looked like the old Verlander and Scherzers and Randy Johnson and Curt Schillings. That's great. Nobody else does that. If one thing goes wrong and he misses time, you're not getting a return on profit at where Sandy Alcantara is going, because the ratios are not going to be there. And he's also pitching on a team that is still not that great. So you could also have some trouble in the win department. So if you lose any volume, I mean, you're going to be in trouble.
One other issue, if you take a sort of middling strikeout arm as your ace, later on in the draft, when the Javiers and the Gausmans and Gallons are going off the board, and you are in the market for a starting pitcher, and you're pretty much either having to push up a big strikeout guy who might wreck your ratios, like say a Blake Snell, or you have to take like a Fried or a Urias, who are also middling strikeout guys. I mean, hey, listen, a strikeout per inning is fine. It's great. Plus you're getting elite ratios from these guys, but then you have to kind of start worrying about your strikeouts. And of course, when you start going down the list later in the draft, if you are chasing strikeouts specifically, it's going to most of the time come with a little bit worse control with some of those guys, right? You'll be like, oh, I need strikeouts, Robbie Ray. Ah, crap. He's, you know, yeah, he's like a 120 plus whip guy. You know, so those are some things to keep in mind. Shane McClanahan, obviously, yeah, one of baseball's brightest stars last year, is the favorite for the Cy Young. I mean, previous to the All-Star break, he had an ERA at 1.71. He led the majors in strikeout rate, 35.7%. His changeup had a 24% swinging strike rate. Absolutely insane. I mean, he's a beast. It's a great home park. Won't have to play his division as much. A lot of good things. I think some concern about injury, but so I'm fine with him there, like kind of when he falls around ADP. I mean, would he be much different than Gausman? I mean, possible. I don't know. There's some stuff to think about there.
If he didn't have the shoulder impingement that cost him 16 days, it was like it was a short IL stint. So that, right, the shoulder impingement, it's an injury. It's now on his profile. And then the strikeout minus walk rate dipped significantly. It dropped 18.9%. So as he was, you know, one of the best in the first half, 31.1%, 24.3, still great. But when you have somebody that's doing so well, kind of at this, like, let's call it the Spencer Strider, Jacob DeGrom level, and then you have this significant dip after, you know, in the second half, what happened? It maybe, and honestly, though, I don't want to knock him, because I kind of like that we're maybe potentially getting a discount, because if we don't see the shoulder impingement, we're just saying, well, he's young and he got to a new threshold of innings pitched and, you know, he kind of wore down and now we're going to see him built up and it'll be the second year and maybe he can sustain some of his metrics, right, or his effectiveness. So there's a potential for a little bit of a discount here, because if you're looking on a per innings pitch basis as well, he is one of your better pitchers. And he is healthy and he is young. I like him.
And our colleague Eric Cross loves him. I haven't talked to him about McClanahan lately, but I know earlier this draft season, I think he was his SP 2 or 3 or 4, something like that, like really high up there. So obviously respect his opinion on that.
It's fair. Sorry, but it's fair for me to be mentioning some cons, though, right? I mean, we got to. They've got to have warts. The pitchers all,
they all
have
do. A little you bit have of, to. Yeah, we have to because we're making difficult decisions here. Last two guys in this tier before we jump into the guys in rounds 4 and 5. And those are the classic old vets, two of the best pitchers in baseball over the last decade. Obviously, we're talking about Max Scherzer, talking about Justin Verlander. I mean, Verlander, we don't have to talk about that magical season anymore. I mean, right, like a 1.75 ERA, pretty much like didn't pitch the previous season and really pitched in 2 years. He was dominant. Strikeout rate went down a little bit. It's fine. Now he's on the Mets, you know, kind of towards the end of his career, but obviously still beastly. And then Max Scherzer has posted basically a swinging strike rate over 14% for 8 consecutive seasons. Over that span, like a Sierra under 3, ERA like 2.5. He's just absolutely beastly. I actually have Scherzer in my top 5. I am a big fan of his. So I do like both of those guys, but they're kind of the two guys like less talked about, and you can occasionally sneak them in a, you know, kind of the end of round 3. I've even seen, you know, them go early round 4. So they're interesting.
Yeah, that time's probably coming to an end here pretty soon. If you're playing in the NFBC main event, I would be really happy if I just spread butter and did 1 through 15 KDS and was landed on the first pick and drafted Ronald Acuña Jr. and at the end of second and beginning of 3 said Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander, I'd be pretty happy with that decision. I think they're going to actually push each other. They have both of this old man, you know, mantra to them, and all of the metrics and data are saying that they are ready to roll. Yeah, two thumbs up on both of the old guys. If you don't like them because they're old, I think that you should probably give them a second chance and give them another look compared to the other, compared to the field, because they are really, really good. And if you are concerned if maybe they miss a little bit of time because of age and you're in Yahoo, bump them up even more. Give them some more juice. And we didn't mention DeGrom. Really, I think so. If you're in Yahoo, go way ahead of the field. I would at least and get him with the IL spots, and just go for gold. I truly would do that. But what kind of advice are you? To give on DeGrom? I mean, it's a risk tolerance. We've talked about that, right? How many teams are you doing? How much are you willing to give or take? Right? It's a tug of war.
Exactly. Yeah. It's. People have been burned, and they understand that you can almost see it, right? You draft him knowing, you know, some people just avoid altogether. And then others like me, I pick my spots. It's almost like the time of the year, like how I'm kind of feeling. Like there was a time when I was just not touching spicy him, and then I wanted some, right? So I did take him in a draft champions lately. Actually, I took him in TGFBI, which is fine. It's, you know, it's a fab league. I feel like I can manage the pitching there. It's obviously a big risk if he misses a lot of time. It's almost like expected that he's going to miss time. I think I had I have an Acuña 1 with DeGrom Scherzer at turn team. I think I did that like a couple months ago, which I love. I'm obviously a huge upside. But it really does come down to how many teams you're going to draft, what your risk tolerance is. There's really so much. It's obvious what a huge doubt he is. I mean, somebody even tweeted me today because I've been getting actually a lot of heat for taking DeGrom. It's actually really funny. Mostly from people I don't know. Somebody who I do know said like, oh, you know, and it's Texas and it's where pitching goes to die. And I thought about it for a second. I'm like, but like, no, maybe not this year. Like you can't, just because things have happened for so many years for so long doesn't mean that he can't have that one season where he makes 28 starts and earns and basically out earns value, and then Haney hits and performs all year. Nathan Eovaldi is back on track. Like, it could happen. Like, they got all these arms. Sure, it could blow up poorly, or it could go really well. I don't know. I'm kind of an optimist. I'm hoping things go well there.
You know, they're one of the interesting teams, actually. I know this isn't a betting podcast, but from a betting standpoint, because if you were to bake in, you know, some sort of percentile of if each team stayed healthy and looked at odds, the Texas Rangers would be popping through the roof, right, to make the playoffs or, you know, whatever the odds would be. That's kind of interesting because if they do stay healthy, they are going to go to the playoffs.
That's a hell of a division.
Yeah.
If you really think about it,
it's good.
If the Angels hitters stay healthy, if the Rangers pitchers stay healthy, you got the Mariners and you got the Astros there at the top, man, that is going to be fun. That'll be fun. Before we just real quick, before we jump into the next round, did want to mention Dylan Cease. And I did also want to say there are two guys in this round, in this tier. This is guys going between this is a tier of guys in rounds 4 to 5 of 15 teamers going 45 to 75 overall. This is a tier where you have now lost two guys in the span of 24 hours, Joe Musgrove and Tyler Glasnow. Just another sort of mental reminder why the pitching is important and why it's going to continue to get pushed up over the next few weeks.
This is why I love you, because I was going to ask you, what does this do to our market? Was like right at the top of this tier is now panic. We just lost two guys. What happens? How about we get into Glasnow and Musgrove real quick? So Glasnow has the moderate oblique strain, and he's going to be missing some significant time. So either you were kind of willing to take the risk on him as it was. Obviously, he's going to get pushed way down. Musgrove is a little bit more interesting because he has a different health portfolio, known as somewhat of a workhorse, and now he has the broken toe. It's not off of his push-off foot, so he's not going to be throwing for 2 weeks. He's certainly going to be dipping into ADP. I've seen two sides of that coin. You know, don't draft a pitcher. Injuries are going to find you. Pitchers get hurt. Don't do it. But for me, knowing that it's nothing, it's not the elbow, it's not the forearm, it's not the shoulder, kind of, I look back at his teammate, actually, in Blake Snell in 2019. He got out of the shower, and he was butt naked, and he dropped something on his foot and broke a different toe, a less significant toe, so he didn't miss as much time. So Musgrove is going to miss more time, but when Snell came back, there was no significant impact of effectiveness. So, man, can you get him as an SP3 and hold off for him? What's the estimated turn timetable? I believe I saw was 420 or right around, late in April. Worst case scenario could be, with a setback early May.
Yeah. I mean, Musgrove 3 to 5 games, most likely. I think I did update both the projections and the top 500 rankings. And I believe we have Musgrove dropping significantly, actually, I think like the one, instead of going like 80, 90 overall, he's more in the like Lizardo, Lance Lynn range, which I think is fair. Maybe I'm overstepping there a little bit. I'm sure some people will take him earlier than that. But in his injury history, honestly, it was more so in the past from his Houston days. He had, shoulder issues. He had some finger problems with his right index finger and infection, tricep injury, foot injury, but really just kind of random stuff. But and then the 6-man rotation is a concern if that isn't, well, it's not a 6-man anymore. But yeah, I mean, that was problematic. It's something we talked about a month ago. It's like, this is before they signed Michael Wacha. It's like, if something happens to their top three guys, Musgrove, Snell, or Darvish, man, they're in trouble. They did sign Wacha, which is great because these things happen, right? It's really sort of dangerous. With Glasnow, man, by the way, I looked on my 15 teams. I only have one Musgrove share. I have one Glasnow. Not that Glasnow's one of those guys you really want because he's kind of, because he pops when he does. He's, top tier strikeout elite guy, everything. But there's just something that just, you just don't want to deal with that roller coaster all year. And so at this point, chopping his innings down from like, the 130, 140 range down to like 100, maybe even less than that. The one positive I did say, I did read, is that he may not have brakes pumped. Like if he does come back, say Memorial Day or maybe, May 15th, he could be just kind of full go from that point on, but just too many headaches. So we've got him dropped to around like the 200 range with guys like maybe like Jeffrey Springs, Detmers. But I can't do it. I don't think I can draft him right now.
It's going to be interesting, right? There's going to be this balancing act of, I need a starting pitcher and Jordan Montgomery and Joe Musgrove are available. What do I do? Right. Like, you could be in these scenarios. So it will be interesting to see where you know, there's just going to be a threshold per person and how early on you have pitching and if you need pitching. But I thought it was interesting to kind of mention those guys off the top, because you also thought about that. So lock in sync. Okay, so who is your favorite out of this next year? Because I'm pretty adamant on at least one guy. And this is like, I want this guy over all of them, so to speak. I would actually even bump him into the next tier.
Who is it?
It's Kevin Gausman, but now I'm looking at scrolling through our list here and I'm like, we were supposed to talk about Dylan Cease. We were supposed to talk about Dylan Cease and we kept getting away from Dylan Cease. I mean, he's been the faller out of this kind of threshold. If these pitchers are rising, he's been sort of dipping a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, you listen to a lot of really smart people, a lot of people who were even in on Cease last year and understand that he's an elite strikeout arm. He's a 30% plus guy. There are very few of those in the league. The point remains that, yeah, he was definitely lucky. I mean, looking at a 2.20 ERA, most likely not repeating. I mean, everything from a Sierra to XFIP was in the 3.5 range. So even if you do get a little bit more good fortune this year, which is very possible, can outperform his peripherals. Still could be good, but I don't think it's going to be anywhere near a 220. And then really it's the walk rate. It's what it comes down to. There's really no one in this range who is walking this many guys. I mean, basically among qualified starting pitchers, he led the league in walk rate. It was a 10.5 mark. The next worst was Nick Pivetta of all people. And we know he walks a lot of guys. He was at 9.5. So Dylan Cease really needs to cut down on the walks really in order to be there. So, I love him. I mean, you know, you look at Baseball Savant. He's got basically like the best run pitch in terms of run value. You know, last season with a slider. I mean, he's a dominant guy. We expect the White Sox to be better. Maybe I'm missing the boat. Maybe some people will be in for a nice little treat if they get a discount on him. But I'm fine with him. But I've not been getting there, because for me, he just fits in with the rest of the guys in this range.
I think I'm going to have to concur with you on that one. Now to Kevin Gausman. I think he could be somebody on the opposite end of Dylan Cease. How you said that if the luck kind of runs out, well, what if the bad luck runs out, or what if all of these things that we've seen from the last 3 years? So if you throw Kevin Gausman's last three seasons into a blender, and then you do sprinkle on a little bit of friendly regression, you have yourself a top five starting pitcher in baseball. So now he's going to see a little bit of less of the AL East. Got to give him a little bit of credit there. He's going to see more NL Central, et cetera, from the schedule. He was tied with Spencer Strider and Shane McClanahan, as mentioned earlier, with the highest swinging strike rate at 15.5%. Kevin Gausman had the highest outside swinging strike rate at 42.7%. And then he bolstered a career low walk rate of 3.9%, which was the fourth lowest among starting pitchers that qualified. So with all of that, the team context, it's another year in Toronto. He's becoming one of the healthier pitchers in all of baseball over the last couple of seasons. I just really like everything. I mean, I just don't have many warts to find on Kevin Gausman. And I do think that he was just slightly unlucky last year. So if I'm placing bets on AL Cy Young, it's going to be on Kevin Gausman and Carlos Rodon for me in the AL.
Yeah, and you're seeing a trend in NFBC where Kevin Gausman is being sort of the more popular of the Blue Jays guys, because the strikeouts do pop a little bit more than his teammate Alek Manoah. And also same thing, you're looking at Manoah's actual ratio, his 2.24 ERA in relation to a 3.85 Sierra, a 3.97 XFIP, and then you're looking at a 244 BABIP last year. I mean, really lucky, right? I mean, most people don't think he's going to repeat there, but he's a workhorse. I think he's a stud. I think we might even see a little increase in the strikeouts, but those guys will be close. They'll kind of get there in different ways, but I think it's true that Gausman, because of the strikeouts, probably a little bit more upside. So yeah, I like both.
Is there anybody you don't like? So Max Fried, I know you like Manoah a little bit. There's Luis Castillo, Christian Javier, Julio Urias. So, hey, okay, you've been drafting Julio Urias, and he's our boy. Both of us are Dodgers fans. We've let that be known. Everyone's talking about regression, right? He's going to get unlucky, the home runs, and look at the BABIP, and the Dodgers aren't going to be able to shift, and the Dodgers are the best at creating the lowest BABIPs. But at some point, can people just acknowledge that he's a workhorse? He's one of the bigger bulldogs in the league. He's coming into his eighth season at age 26. He's got one of the lowest barrel rates. He's got a very low walk rate. And albeit the strikeout rate's at 24%, you got a low walk rate and the average swinging strike rate, and people think that he's just going to get unlucky. But the way that he presents his pitches and the pitch mix that he presents and the way that he blends them, these hitters have a hard time barreling the ball and putting the bat on the ball. And so these BABIPs that you're seeing is because the balls that are put in play are very easily catchable or playable, I should say. So for me, is he going to continue to just fall? Because he's last year was second, third round pick, and he kind of pays off that price tag again. So he's now proving people wrong. Because the first question was, is he a workhorse? He can't be a workhorse, right? And then he proved to be a workhorse. And then it's a skills thing, but we like the skills. Now we don't like the skills. So I know you like him.
I'll always draft the him and Fried, man. Those guys, I have no problem with them. I know exactly what I'm getting in the ratio department. It's going to be elite, and ratios are really a really tough thing to mess with. And it does help absorb when I do end up having to force one of those two steps. And I'm feeling silly. I'm like, oh, Cole Irvin, Narrative Street against his old team. I know I'm bringing it up again, but like, I don't even know if they play each other's here. I'm sure they do.
Poor Cole Irvin. Like, I do have some. Oh, sorry. Go on.
No, but like it's. These guys are so solid, and it's a matter of your build. And I love the fact that these guys always kind of end up falling. I think there's a little bit of a anti-Dodgers bias too when it comes to him. And I don't know, how do you project him for like a 3.5 higher ERA when the guy over 600 career innings has a 2.82 ERA, always continually outperforming any peripheral strikeout rate the previous season? When he won 20 games in 2021, it was over 26%. So, I mean, 24, 26 is nothing to sneeze at. Really isn't all that much of a difference. So, induces incredibly, low hard contact. Like, he's just a beast in every way. So, I'm a fan of his. I'm a fan of Max Fried. I think, I bet on Max Fried last year to win the NL Cy Young. That was my bet. He was a finalist. But, of course, strikeouts didn't quite get there. Alcantara had the magic season. But I'm always in on those guys. The last guy I'll mention here is Luis Castillo, because, man, I just feels like a fun guy to roster this season. Moving from, this is your the Matty Wood special, moving from the reverse Will Myers for pitchers, moving from like Great American and Cincy, basically the worst park for pitchers, to the best park for pitchers in T-Mobile. Last season was absolutely cruising once he joined Seattle. The starts that he made in Seattle, I think it was just like four or five starts, were just like magical. Basically like 42 strikeouts in 31 innings, only 5 runs allowed. He's a beast, and more run support this year. Luis Castillo is fine. There are a lot of good riches in this area. This is why I really love to shop for pitchers in this area.
Yeah, Zach Wheeler as well. Really like him. We've seen a lot of innings out of him. The one thing I will say, though, so there are some warts. I want to highlight some warts with Zach Wheeler and Shane Bieber before we close things out. So Wheeler, he only threw 153 innings last season after missing time with forearm tendonitis. Are we not at all worried about that? I guess not. The barrel rate is up to 7.5% after allowing just 4.6% in 2021. So Wheeler's barrel rate was basically the same as JT Brubaker. And he's got an average swinging strike rate. So he's kind of in that range of not a lot of swing and miss stuff at 11.4%. But there are notes out of spring training and out of camp that Wheeler is adding a sweeper / slurve to his pitch mix. There's good reports on the pitch. He was mixing it in today. And there's hopes that he's trying to increase his swing and miss stuff. So he's being conscious about it. I like to hear that with somebody that has an average strike rate, but can register strikeouts like he does, 25%+. So there's kind of some pros and cons with Wheeler, but I think that it's important to mention some of those cons that I did with missing the time, the forearm tendonitis, et cetera. And then with Bieber, 13th lowest average fastball velocity among starting pitchers at 91.3. It kind of mesmerizes me that he's able to get the strikeout rate at like north of 25%, with, you know, the differential that you can have with a fastball at 91 miles per hour. It's rather impressive. That's some Zach Greinke shit. So it does make it difficult to have that differential on your secondary pitches. And then the shoulder problems. We've had shoulder problems in 2021. So he did miss 95 days, and the barrel rate, it's up just a little bit. It went to 7.2%. So I don't think Bieber out of this entire group, I don't think I'll have any.
The problem is there's only one draft. You ever draft and you're like, man, I wish I could get two picks this round. Right.
Yeah.
Like every time I draft, and you have to take stand somewhere. You just can't have everyone. I think the key for me is psychologically is to not make up reasons just to fade somebody. Like, because,
sure,
because I love Manoah and Castillo and Urias and Javier, do I have to hate somebody? You know, I'm not saying that just because I have Wheeler or Bieber lower in VDP in relation to ADP, it doesn't mean I dislike them. It's just a matter of, based on my calculations and my projections, where I have them falling on the map of all these players. And I just have preferences. So, which means in a certain amount of drafts, they're just guys I'm not going to land on. And in every range, in every tier, there's going to be your curve. There are going to be guys that way outperform, guys that just stay steady, and guys that get hurt and fall out. And maybe a couple of them that, you know, just fall out because of performance or bad luck or whatever. But with these elite guys, it's usually injury related. But that whole rant basically just saying, like, just because I'm out on someone, I don't want to try to have to make up reasons, especially as an analyst, and try to BS myself and others, you know, why I'm not into someone. Sorry, I just have a feel that Zach Wheeler is not going to be a, you know, top 20 pitcher. That's just how I feel. Part of it has to do with the whole Philly thing. I just have this feeling that Bryce Harper not being there in the beginning, that the team might struggle. I could be completely wrong, but that's my stand. If I'm looking at Fried versus Wheeler, every time I'm going to just take Max Fried. That's my preference this season.
I like that. You have a stand and you're sticking to it. You kind of have this gut feel this year of the Phillies kind of coming off the World Series loss without Bryce Harper, that they're going to kind of take I wouldn't call it a nosedive, but I've heard you a couple times mention that you're kind of a little bit sour on them this year, and that's okay. You've got a feel for it.
Stop.
Hey, okay. I don't mind that. One thing I left before we wrap this up, when you were talking about you don't have to find something that you don't like, I also don't think that you have to necessarily find something that you do like. So how I mentioned, I said out of this group, it's maybe Bieber that I dislike the most. And if I'm telling myself I've got to get my SP2 here, and lo and behold, for whatever reason, in my main event or my big draft, it's Bieber that's left. If I don't like him, I don't think that now is the time that I tell myself, all right, I've got to get him because he's the only SP2.
Yes, left. Yes. That is advanced drafting. That's critical thinking, basically. You're not settling just because we've been caught many times, especially in a live draft. You're like, oh, the last man on the board. Hey, nobody wants him. What's wrong? You know, and all your analysis, everything you've done all season is kind of thrown out the window. And maybe Bieber's not the best example because he's great.
Sure.
He's always good when he's healthy.
Player X.
Yeah. But yeah, definitely be careful with that.
So I'm going to be Disney Dad next week. I'm going to be heading back to California for my first time, actually. And so my wife and daughter and I are flying to California to John Wayne Airport on Sunday. And we'll be spending a week in California at Disney Resort and doing Disneyland and all that good stuff. So you are going to be having a guest come on next week.
I am. I got my good oldest friend in the industry, Scott Jenstad.
Beautiful.
He's going to join us next week. It'll probably be a day later, but pod will be out next Thursday. We'll cover as much as we can with the rest of the starting pitchers.
Make sure to ask him about Trevor Rogers. I kind of trolled him a little bit tonight because of the adjustments that Rogers and the positiveness that we're hearing out of spring training camp. Hopefully I still have a job after Scott Jenstad fills in for me, because he's an absolute stud. So this has been good. I love talking pitching, but we could just go on and on and on.
Yes. Yes. One day we'll do a massive, like, 3-hour. There's always, that's the beauty of it is, you know, there's so many, I can listen to people talk about pitching all day. So, but join us next week for sure, Matt. In the meanwhile, have an amazing time with your family. You know, say hi to Mickey and everybody. And for Matthew Maddie Wood Davis, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with Matthew Davis and Vlad Sedler. Make sure to follow your hosts on Twitter at @_MattyWood_ and @RotoGut. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.